Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to the Cookbook Circle podcast. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Victoria.
We're two friends with a shared love of food, cooking, and all things cookbooks.
We are now in the third season of this podcast. Ooh. And this one is all about, well, not really anything in particular. We are themeless. So you can expect deep dives on certain dishes, reviews of cookbooks, of course, but there'll be new cookbooks, old cookbooks, all sorts of cookbooks. And of course, we'll be asking you, our lovely listeners, for some input on episodes that we're going to do.
It's going to be so fun. And if you love what we do, we're also on Patreon. This means if you'd like to support us, your subscription will help to cover the podcast's costs, from the books themselves to the ingredients for what we cook. And in return, you'll get some fun stuff like bonus mini-sodes. To find out more, visit our website, thecookbookcircle.com, or you can find the link in our show notes. Thanks, friends. Now, let's get to the fun part.
Oh, hi, Hannah.
Oh, hi, Victoria.
That was a bit casual of me, wasn't it? Oh, hey.
Yeah. Hey. Didn't see you there.
I'm trying to be flirty. Yeah, always. I haven't flirted in a long time, so you would, you know, you probably wouldn't know about it if I was.
Were you good? I bet you were a decent flirt back in the day.
Well, you know. I got married. I bagged the guy, right? So
I loved how much you just, yeah, accepted that. My version of flirting is absolutely ripping the piss out of somebody to the point where...
Yeah, I mean, I feel like mine is too, still.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you want me to get him in and ask? No.
One day, Steve will appear on this podcast one day. I feel like he would have a good story about it. Yeah. Live update, Steve, please.
Yeah, and then you can update you later in the pod.
While Vic texts her husband, I'll do a little segue for her. In that she has, since we recorded the last episode, been to bloody Japan. She's only bloody gone to Japan.
I've been and come back.
I don't know if you ever knew,
Korea.
But she has been there before. This wasn't the first time.
It was so great.
Was it like when you put your foot on Japanese soil? Was it like, whoa, like the clouds parted? And the...
Yeah. No, it was. It was more annoying because I had to get like a bus from one terminal to another to get on the subway, and I was just like, a bit annoyed about the whole thing by the time I got to Japan, because I flew to Seoul and then transferred to Japan, to Fukuoka in Japan. So that was just annoying. But once I was like, dropped my bags off in my hotel and like got out there, got to like a konbini, I was very happy. I was a very happy girl.
Oh, what was your like, what were you zoning in on in the konbini that you wanted to get?
So one of my favourite konbini things to get is they do these little cartons of tea, like flavoured tea, right? Yeah. Like cold flavoured tea, they're little cartons, and the flavour changes throughout the year. So that is one of my favourite things. I don't know why, but it's just always... they just feel very nostalgic for them. So the flavours that I found this year, this time, were a bit boring. They were muscat, which I don't really know what it is, so I didn't get that one.
Oh, is it not a booze? Muscat?
I don't think so. Well, it looked like a bit like a grape on the front. Maybe
it must be a grape, and then they make it into wine.
Yeah, like a wine. But I did get an apple one. And a lemon one, I think. So that was great. I also like these little chocolate bars that are called Black Thunders.
Oh.
Love them. They're like really cheap. I don't like 20 yen or something. Like really cheap. They're little. Love them. So that was another one. And then the little mochi chocolate bun thing that I think I've talked about before on the pod. It's like a soft squidgy... I dread to think. Yeah, I love it so much. I ate a number of those.
You know, my favourite chocolate bar when I was there was a crunky Pop Joy. Pop J or Pop Joy? I don't know.
Something like that, yeah, crunky. They love those, don't they?
Oh, I loved them.
They are, and they are good.
They are good. And they're like little... I feel like they do like portions of chocolate quite well. Like the squares are good.
Yeah. Like, I don't think they're particularly good at sweet. Like, the chocolate is fine.
No,
I like
all
the little
chocolate
nuts. I definitely brought some chocolate covered macadamias back because I love that. But like sweet stuff generally, like, not into it.
No.
But
it's fun.
It is fun.
Yeah.
They do have silly things, and I like that.
Yes. Not unlike ourselves.
I've had a reply from Stephen. Shall I read it live on air?
How did you frame the question, first of all, actually?
I just said, was I a good flirt? Podcast question. And so... you know, I mean, what a guy. He's replied, yeah, I think it's a subset of you being good at banter/funny. Same skill, mainly.
So. I love Steve for just always taking, like, any question ever with, like, a really open little heart.
Yeah.
What a man.
Maybe we should, you know, ask one of my exes and then we'll see. But I'm not going to text any of those live on air.
That's a different podcast.
Not when I've just texted my husband.
If I texted any of mine, the podcast would finish without a reply. And I might die without a reply. We would never hear from them again.
I feel like we're good. Yeah, same. I feel like we're good. We're good at banter, so
yeah,
we're good at, like, you know, small talk and like keeping a conversation going. I feel like it's one of my key sets of skills.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's a valuable skill, handy in meetings, I would say.
Yes.
Tell us all the foodie things you bought in Japan then.
Yes. Okay. I have a long list. I've made a list. So Nu is going to be talking about this on here. and we'll see.
So when we say foodie things, are we saying things you ate or things like ingredients that you bought, utensils that you bought to bring home? How are we defining this?
So I've just made a list of things I brought home with me.
Okay, great.
That are both edible and utensil-y related.
Wonderful. I love that you have a list. I mean, mine would be like one long, but I know you and I love you and I know that this is going to be longer.
There was a list. There was a list before I went. Okay. So the main thing I wanted to get when I was there was a shoko pan pan, like a pan to make Japanese bread in, because they're quite expensive when they're here and they're not expensive there. And there are certain like shape, they're kind of square, they've got a lid.
Right.
So I was like, I may as well just go and buy a Japanese one, right?
Yeah.
Because why the hell not? I mean, I did
was
buy
one. Was the flight more expensive than the tin was here?
No. But I bought other things, so it's fine.
It was all worth it. It was an investment trip.
It was an investment trip. And I ended up going to this amazing, like, culinary stuff shop.
Oh, in, God, what you love when you stumble across Fukuoka.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. It was so great. And it was tiny, as often these things are in Japan, but it was, like, so full of, like, amazing stuff. Couldn't find the shoko pan pan, so I had to ask. And which is fine, because I speak Japanese.
Oh, that is so... can you actually, like, just, like, say the sentence? Like, that's so impressive.
I mean, I had to learn what the word for, like, baking tin was, right? Like, or, like... I've made sure I knew that before I went. But, yeah... And I feel like one of my, my favourite things about this trip was buying this shoko pan pan, because she told me where they were and they had this big catalogue. And like I said, this was obviously all going on in Japanese. And she then came up to me after and she was like, oh, these are the ones that we've got, but we can order them and they'll come in like 3 or 4 days. And I was like, you think I live here? And I love that.
Oh, that is the best feeling.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, thanks. But I bought one, like a medium-sized one. I can't remember the exact... I was going to buy the big one, and thank God I didn't, because it's an awkward shape to bring home in a suitcase. Haven't used it yet.
Did you, like, stuff your socks in it for the suitcase?
I should have done that. In the end, I ended up taking it in my hand luggage.
Precious cargo.
And, yeah, and I was a bit worried that I'd have to throw it away, but anyway. So bought that. I'm very excited to use it when I get around to it, and hopefully that will be soon. Also, utensil-wise, I treated myself to a fancy chopping board.
Nice. Wood?
It is wood inner, but the outer is this, like, fancy, like, rubbery material that, like, protects your knives, like, your Japanese knives.
Oh, of
course.
So
that your knife isn't, like, hitting the chopping board hard and ruining your knives. They think of everything.
Why are we so behind?
I'm very excited about that. And what I wish I'd bought for it is, like, they do these special, like, they almost look like whiteboard rubbers to, like, rub off any, I guess, just
stuff,
like,
on your board.
Yeah, or, like, you know, like the rubber or whatever. So it's smooth, like, it's a smooth thing. So I didn't get one of those, but maybe I can order one online. But so I'm very excited about that. That was a bit of a splurge, but I got
That's
it tax free. But yeah, exactly. That was my little treat to myself, because I know I was going to give myself one treat. The exchange rate was very good, so it. And they would have been way more than that here. So that's fine.
Yeah.
And then I did buy some other little utensils, mostly like little graters, like the...
Tiny graters.
Yes. The...
Only classic, tiny
what are they called? How many times do we sing that song?
Yeah, I know. That's why it's I did beautiful. It in that breathy Can way.
Oh, tiny grater.
Right, Kerry.
My clothes.
For like wasabi and stuff.
Yes, they're genius.
Yeah, you know, maybe there's one for you as well, but we'll see. We'll have to wait and see. And then some food that I bought. Vegan QP update. I found it.
Oi.
I had to go to 2 shops. Didn't find it in the first shop. Well, I looked everywhere for it, actually. I didn't find it till my last day. And then I had to... I was talking to some of my Japanese friends about it when I saw them. And they were like, oh, you need to go to a big supermarket. So I went to two big supermarkets, but found it.
Wow.
What's I haven't tried
Japanese
it yet.
For vegan?
I don't know. Well, this one, the Kewpie just says, like, they've used egg-free, what you probably would translate as egg-free mayonnaise, right? Like,
gotcha. Yeah.
On it. But a lot of I saw some vegan stuff out there and it was just like vegan, like vegan, wow. Like the word. But I'm sure there is we'll see from this book today, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, this is just such perfect
I know.
Intro material for the book that we're talking about.
I feel like I could go on for ages, but I bought a lot of mayonnaise. I bought...
Yeah.
So I bought lots of vegan Kewpie. I bought spicy Kewpie.
Oh.
Because I saw it and that, so I bought mentaiko Kewpie. And mentaiko is like... it's cod roe that's like been like spiced or something. It's very... It's the particular food of Fukuoka. Like, it's their famous food. And so I found it in, like, a Fukuoka shop. And I was like, I'll go ahead and do it.
Well, you said the other day you like taramasalata, right?
Yes.
Like, but is it, like, a similar kind of vibe?
Yeah, I always thought I didn't like it. But this was, this trip, I was like, I'm going to eat it because I probably will like it based on everything I know. So I was like, I'll bring the mayo back, because who doesn't like a mayo with a something something in it?
Can I ask if the vegan Kewpie interest is just novelty based for you, or are you just you're eager to try something new? Like, because if you bought loads of it, then do you just want to try a vegan mayo? I'm intrigued.
No, because, well, I think that, you know, part of me wonders if I'll go vegan this year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, as we talked about previously. And another part of me would miss Kewpie a lot.
Right, okay. So you're future-proofing yourself here.
So I'm future-proofing myself. And also, like, I'm interested. I mean, like, I find it all really fascinating. But it was
great.
The Kewpie one I wanted. Like, in the first supermarket I went to, I did find... egg-free mayonnaise, similar vibe, right?
Right.
But it wasn't Kewpie branded, and I was like, don't want to risk it on this.
Okay, yeah.
I can get vegan mayonnaise at home.
Oh, yeah.
I want Kewpie.
Any old shite is doing that.
Yeah, exactly. So, because I just know I wouldn't be able to get it here. But anyway, so I will let you know, the Kewpie, the vegan Kewpie saga will go... into
on and on.
Probably
on
I probably will wait until I finish my current Kewpie to do that. There's so much, but I just want to shout out to the honey that I love.
Yes, honey.
It's Hannah
right here.
The honey that I love. No, it's not Hannah.
Oh, yes, you do.
I mentioned like it to honey. You, didn't I?
Yes.
I love honey. I cannot remember the brand. But there's this... Oh, it's called Sugi Bee Garden, right? S-U-G-I. And they are...
This sounds like a New York socialite, but anyway.
Sugi Bee. It's my next cat's name. and they are just... They're this honey brand from Kumamoto, where I did my study abroad, and I got hooked on it, and they do it in all different flavors, and it's just so good, and I couldn't wait to get it. So I brought lots of that home, and then I saw my friend Carly at the weekend, and she'd been to Japan last year, and I hadn't seen her since, and she'd brought me a bowl too. So I've lots of this honey.
That's cute.
Very excited to just use it. I got yuzu, I got mango, and I got blueberry.
Oh.
It's just so good. And in the shop when you go, they basically just mix it with hot water and like give you like a tea, like make a kind of tea with it.
Cool.
And it's just really nice. Yeah. And they also have like the shop where I got it from, they had like the ice cream where it's all mixed in. Mm. It's great. If you're ever in Japan, Sugi Bee Garden, I believe that you can get it all over Japan. You usually will see it at, like, train stations and in, like, the, like, souvenir section. But it's from Kumamoto and it's...
Sorry. It was a
Sugi. The Sugi Bee section. Nice. I like that.
Thanks.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's like what I bought.
I want and a to lot go... more. Yes, I can imagine. I want to go to Japan with you or, well, preferably you. I mean, you'd be top of my list. But to go with someone who can speak the language so I can experience it more. Because I feel like when I was there, I was 22, 23. Mm. I was quite like a meek little creature, if you can believe it.
And, whoa.
And I just, you know, I was a bit afraid and I would just only kind of go into places if they looked like...
English friendly.
And I still want to go back and experience all these things. And I bet in the, like, you know, X amount of years since then, I'm not going to reveal my age, that there's like loads more veggie options and, you know, or even I would just give less of a shit and be like more willing to make a fool of myself. But yeah, I'd love to go back. My Japanese story that I'm pretty sure I've told on this podcast before, my embarrassing one, one of them, one of the many, including setting off like an alarm in a disabled toilet in the university that I was teaching in, was that I made people sing, the staff sing to me in a Cold Stone Creamery by mistake.
Oh, because
I could only say the word yes rather than no. And then I noticed in London the other day they've opened a Cold Stone Creamery. I don't know how to feel about that. Our American listeners will be very familiar with Cold Stone. I was a huge fan when I lived there, but yeah.
I was also a huge fan when I lived in Japan. Because they had one in like in Fukuoka and they would sing. It is good. I like how they mix it up like a little teppanyaki ice cream style.
On a Cold Stone. Genius. Yeah.
But you know, for long time listeners, you'll all know that I'm a big Baskin Robbins in Japan fan.
Huge Baskin Robbins fan.
Like, embarrassingly so, actually. Go halfway across the world to eat a Baskin Robbins, which I did do.
How many did you have while you were there?
I actually only had one, right? Because I was staying basically not close to one. They closed the one down that I thought was staying, but I did have one and it was banging, let me tell you.
What flavour?
Love Potion. And it's a love... that's the name of it, Love Potion. And it's a Love Potion.
Love Potion number.
Love Potion. And it's a Love Potion's anniversary. So they've like enhanced it a bit. And it was just, it hit.
What's in Love Potion?
It's like raspberry and it's all just weird. Not weird, but they all have strange names in Japan.
I come here for it. But life's dull. Let's change it up.
And they don't call it Baskin Robbins in Japan, they call it 31. 31.
I will always enjoy Vic doing a Japanese accent. Well, I would say but it's more like an and. And
yeah, we're on the Japanese vibe. Yeah, expect a lot of chat from me today. Sorry about that, lads.
No, well, everyone's loving it, I'm sure. We are talking about... I keep wanting to call this Vegan Easy Japan or Japan Vegan Easy, but it's Vegan Japanese by Tim Anderson, UK's authority on Japan. He's a one-man Japan.
He's a one-man American Japan man.
Yes.
Japan Pan Man.
Japan Anderson. Shall I
tell you? God, you're so much better at that than me.
Better is a strong word. Yes, please tell me. Yes, I'll tell you the little bit that I know about Tim Anderson. So he started on MasterChef. Did you watch the MasterChef that he was in?
I've never watched any MasterChef. I think it's so boring. So no.
Well, I did. And I love boring food TV, as we know. We talked on the mini-sode earlier about how I'm enjoying boring Great British Menu. I genuinely do, like, background food TV is my favourite thing. Like, there's very few food TV shows, like, reality-wise or competition-wise that I actually really like, but I just more enjoy them as, like, the hum in the background.
Anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. This is about Tim.
More about Tim,
and this
please.
Is about Vic.
yeah, this so episode's Tim... about me and my Japanese heritage.
So Tim was born in Wisconsin. Is Wisconsin the Sunshine State?
That's what state?
Is it the Sun? Oh, no, it's the Cheese State.
It's
how
cheese
ironic.
Cheese State. I know.
It? Yes, I think it is the Cheese State.
It is, yeah. They don't they have those hats?
What
cheese, like hats. I think they're called cheese heads, aren't they? Like, yeah, honestly, like little, like big things of cheese. Like you see,
I want one of these.
Their football. I'm gonna get a picture of it right now. I'm just going to Google Wisconsin
fresh
cheese
out
of
the
hat.
Super Bowl, where it's just like it's you know Americana over here. But I'm sorry if to Wisconsiners if it's not the cheese state. Vic will correct
it
us
is.
Very shortly. She's
well,
looking
I don't
at
know about this state, but like, look at all of these cheese hats.
Okay, these
like
are
it's
incredible.
A thing.
I would love one of those hats, and then I could go as like the Ratatouille rat at Christmas or so. Christmas? That's not when you dress up. Halloween. Christmas is really different in my family. anyway, so he was born in Wisconsin. Raised in Wisconsin, different towns. Nobody needs to know that, maybe except him. But then he moved to LA in 2002 and he studied Japanese food history at Occidental College. Occidental?
Just to say, sorry, its actual nickname is the Badger State, but it is also nicknamed America's Dairyland. So.
And when I Googled Wisconsin State, I got what are three fun facts about Wisconsin. Wisconsin is a leading producer of ginseng in the US. Green Bay is is known as the toilet paper capital of the world. And the first ice cream sundae was concocted in Two Rivers in 1881. So yeah, it's also apparently known for its drinking culture. So, you know, there we are.
Not much else to do, clearly.
Apparently, it's got a river, one of the rare rivers that flows north. You can just sit there and look at that all day. Anyway, so.
Tim, Occidental Tim. College.
He studied Japanese food.
Did he just, you know, fall into there?
By accident. Oh, I'm sorry, the US. And our lovely, lovely listeners there. So yeah, moved there in 2002. He studied food history Japanese food history. So, you know, this goes back a long way. Then he graduated in 2006 and he moved to Japan to further his interest in Japanese cuisine to Kitakyushu. How do I say that?
Kitakyushu.
Yeah, Kitakyushu. Yeah. And it doesn't
that means North Kyushu, just, you know, to translate.
Oh, it's
that
Kita.
Literally just means North Kyushu.
Oh,
and
interesting.
Kyushu is the southernmost island of Japan. If you think about, Japan being shaped like a banana, it's the bottommost big island that isn't, obviously, Okinawa and those little ones. Anyway, just, you know, a little geography lesson for you there.
Our resident Japan expert. It doesn't say much about what he did in Japan, but he moved to London then, like 2 years later, with his British wife, and he worked as a craft beer bar manager, which I think makes sense. He mentioned something about this in one of the dishes that I made, I think. Oh. Anyway, so he went on MasterChef. And that was kind of the beginning of everything for him. So his own website says that he's like, his cooking's primarily informed by his American heritage and his love for regional Japanese food. I haven't seen many like American dishes, but I guess it's just like hints of kind of like
decadence or whatever in whatever he's doing, that it's not like strictly maybe completely 100% like authentic. And he won MasterChef basically,
which, yes he did,
in 2011, and then it just kind of all blew up for him after that. He opened Nanban, which was in Brixton, London. It was a pop-up and it became a kind of bricks and mortar restaurant. And then he opened Nanban Central. He left both of those in 2021. It doesn't say much about it, but I did find an article that was like, after he finished, it was like, or after he left Nanban in Brixton, it was like up for rent for like £50,000 a year or something. The space. So it's like, maybe they were just like having a rough time. I don't know. But anyway, he does loads of other stuff. He's written loads of books.
Loads of books.
Soul food. Yeah. Japanesey. Tokyo stories. Vegan Japanesey. And then most recently, Your Home Izakaya. And he also writes for like loads of other fun stuff, Vittles, which we've talked about loads, Olive Delicious, loads of papers, National Geographic Traveller Food, and then he's often on like BBC Radio 4's The Kitchen Cabinet, and apparently he's a veteran podcast presenter. Teach us your ways. So yeah, and he's also been like a development chef and consultant, so he's worked for like Le Creuset and Itsu, which I thought was interesting. For anyone, Itsu doesn't exist outside the UK, does it? But it's like a sushi chain, kind of Japanese style chain, KitchenAid, and the Japanese National Tourism Organization. And he lives in Lewisham, which is interesting because that's where I used to live. Never saw him. Doesn't mean it's not true, but I'm just highly skeptical. And his wife Laura, daughter Tig, and what I think is interesting is they call out his cat on his website as being FIV positive. I'm not sure if that's to like raise awareness of the FIV positive plight of the feline community, but appreciate the work. And he mentions that cat at the start of this, doesn't he? In the intro, it's like disclaimer, like no animals were harmed in the making of this book, and then it's like blah blah blah, in fact the only animal involved in this book in any way is my cat Baloo, who repeatedly sat on my laptop as I, and then it's like just like loads of letters in succession. Funny. Which is cute. What did you think of the Woody Harrelson quote on the very first page?
Not
a typical explain.
So I guess this is like a reason to go vegan situation, but he's got like this, it's like a whole page, right? And it's got a quote from Woody Harrelson that says, I had tons of acne and mucus. I met some random girl on the bus who told me to quit dairy and all those symptoms would go away 3 days later. Would go away 3 days later. By God, she was right. And then he's accredited that quote to Woody Mucus Harrelson.
Yeah. Not oft referenced these days, Woody. He's kind of PNG, but, there we are.
It's weird. And then he's like got a weird picture of what looks a bit like Woody Harrelson, like a image
thing with some
and then it's got like the Japanese for like spot acne, I suppose.
Is that what that is?
Which is weird.
So really fun cover and illustrations, really beautiful.
I feel like all of his books do really well at that.
Yeah, this is the first one that I have owned. I was really excited to get this and see what it was like, but it was like he does like an intro about how he's not vegan, but he's not officially, but he's vegan frequently and accidentally.
Yeah.
And then he kind of talks about how to get like
meaty flavor without the meat. And then he gives you like a larder, right? So like items that you should have to stock up on flavor, which obviously has like miso, mirin, dashi. And then he's just like 11 more lovely vegan Japanese things you may want to get, like mushrooms, pickles, all these things that you would obviously associate with Japanese cuisine, yuzu juice. And yeah, it's like, it's interesting. He's got like the very first kind of like cooking instructions you get on page 26 are how to cook rice, which is obviously a bit of
you know, Japanese rice is hard to cook.
Yeah, it's great.
And you know, if you like Japanese rice, you should definitely, you know, learn the best way to cook it for you. Like, the best way to cook it, the easiest way to cook it for you, because it is good. And if you ever want to make sushi, obviously you need Japanese short grain rice.
You do. I like the short grains.
Yuzu.
He's got a vegan Japanese mayo recipe in here.
Yes.
Considering your complete ignorance about the culture and the country, what was your first impression of the book?
So, disclaimer, I got this on Kindle, but I'm just looking at it on my iPad, so it's very, like, I think it's laid out in pretty much exactly the same way as the book, and you get all the pictures and everything. I'm not reading it in black and white on, like, a Kindle. It's very pretty, like all of his books are. I've got a couple. I've definitely got one other of his, and I've seen more. I wasn't as like excited on my first go through it as I thought I might be, I was a bit sad about. I felt like maybe, and I don't know if you felt this as well, that maybe it didn't seem like there was a lot of recipes.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I don't maybe
know,
not.
But maybe it's because he has a whole section about, like, making, like, dashis, like, soups, and like, the sauce, like, the sweet soy sauce that he makes and all this kind of stuff. Like,
yeah,
some of that I kind of just ignored because I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
And because I knew we were doing this book, I did bring some, like, kombu dashi, just kombu dashi back from Japan.
Nice.
Because I knew that would be hard to get here, and I didn't really want to just be, like, soaking my own kombu for ages.
Nobody wants to soak their own kombu.
No, they don't. But, yeah, I felt a bit like, I felt a little deflated on my first go through. That's not to say that's how it ended up.
Yeah, I'm quite relieved to hear that in a way, because I joke that Vic feels ignorant about Japanese cuisine. It's still the opposite. But I do, because I'm veggie, and I do occasionally eat fish, as long-time listeners will know. But I just, like, yeah, I felt like when I was there, I didn't take full advantage of the cuisine because I was a bit, like I said, a bit young and scared and didn't want to eat meat. And then, yeah, I just feel like it's something that I only know a portion about, but I'm really curious about, and I'd love to know more. And then when I was, when I was looking through it, I was like, it's a bit like, not inspired, but like it was quite involved, a lot of it as well, that you had to, like, it almost felt like a restaurant cookbook
where
you had to kind of go back and like do a dressing on this page or do the dashi from that page. And I was just, oh god, I just want something relatively easy.
Yeah, when this whole book is about it being easy, right?
Yeah,
and he says that every opportunity of every recipe, he's like, there's like a difficulty rating for everyone, but like that doesn't change because it's supposed to be an easy cookbook. And that kind of annoyed me, and it just felt redundant, but yeah, I looked through this the first time and I thought I would have like loads of things bookmarked.
Yeah.
But I didn't.
But you didn't.
Yeah. So I had to look again. And like when
lower
I...
Lower standards and look again.
Lower my standards and look again. And, you know, that goes back to my flirting technique. No, yeah, I just wasn't... And also, I, you know, obviously, we'll rate this at the end, spoiler alert, but, like, accessibility-wise, like, I'm always looking at it from that point of view as well. Like, yeah. I know that I have a good Japanese, like, pantry, right? I have stuff in my house always yeah. because we eat a lot of this food. And I was I knew we were doing this book and I was literally going to Japan so I could find some of this stuff.
Totally.
But, like, I don't think a lot of it is that easy to get. I don't know what to see. Like, even, like, daikon, right? Like, yeah. that comes up a lot. Muli, it's sometimes called. It's like a radish, yes. Japanese radish. It's used in, like, some South Asian cooking as well. Like, but I don't know where to buy that here. I've, like, had it in my odd box once.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you even if you knew where to buy it, if you didn't know what it looked like, you can come across it sometimes and just I was yeah. with someone the other week and they're like, "What the hell's a daikon?" Do you yeah. know what I mean? Like you could just not even recognize it.
Yeah, and it's just it's that kind of like it's not a common thing here, but it is like daikon is such a massive part of Japanese food, right? Especially yeah. like vegetarian food and like he talks a bit about. Shojin ryori, which is like when you go to a temple or whatever, or if you stay over at like a ryokan, like a traditional Japanese inn, I think is how they translate it. But like,
yeah,
that food will all be vegan because it's like almost like a Buddhist religious thing. But like, no one's eating that on the regs, right? But everybody in Japan knows what a daikon is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think. It didn't blow my mind. And that's obviously hard to say for me.
Yeah, we never want to say about anyone's book. I think I also struggled a little bit with, like, meals. Do you know what I mean? Because it's like I saw these fun, like, leek pea and potato croquettes. Mm. And it's like, of course I could pair them up with something like that. Bastardized basically, but it would be fun if there was like a suggestion of like
yes
what to eat it with. I'm using that as
yeah
an example, but like there was a few things like that and I was like, oh, I'm not gonna be able to eat that like on its own. Would people eat that with rice? I don't fully know. So I was trying to go through and just find like dinnery things because they were the kind of opportunities for me yes. to cook something. And yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
I guess then,
by the end of it, maybe I felt that this was a little bit rushed as a book. Like, maybe, because he has a book called Japanese, right? Like, this is the sister to another book. And, like, was it that his publisher or somebody said to him, like, it's just too meaty and the people want vegan food and, like, can we make Japanese food vegan? And it was a case of, like, I don't know. I've got... a lot of love and respect for Tim Anderson.
Yeah, he's great.
I love his other books. He is writing a book about food in Hokkaido, which is the northernmost island in Japan. And if you follow him on Instagram, it's so interesting, all of his like research trips that he's done. To me, a nerd. But like, I just don't think that this maybe was his forte. And maybe it's just because it's not Japanese food's forte. Maybe you need the fish. Like, you need fish dashi and stuff.
Isn't it interesting that there's not really vegan replacements for fish? There's only ever vegan replacements for meat. Like, I know that people do, like, chickpea tuna and stuff like that. But, like, in the whole, like, meat replacement world, it's all focused on, like, sausages and rashers and steaks and stuff like that. Yeah. They're never doing, like, I don't know.
Yeah, fish fingers, can't you? But I guess it's that texture's hot, and obviously the taste.
People are funny about fish, though, aren't they? Like, British and Irish people, I think, are, like, often quite, like, iffy about it.
Oh, yeah. Like, white fish or...
Yeah.
Prawns, and that's it.
Yeah, pretty much. But anyway, my question to you, I was walking the dog before we started recording, and I was like, when did you get into, like, rice? Because I was thinking about, like, we were talking about this in work the other day, like, staples of... that people turn to for comfort. And he talks about that in this, where mm-hmm. he's like, rice is my, my carb, like my staple.
Yeah.
Mine, obviously, like growing up was like potatoes and pasta and bread. Yeah. But we weren't really like a rice household. Like my mum did make like delicious, like Asian stuff. Especially like a bit later on. But yeah, were you like a rice household, or was it when you started like studying Japanese and stuff that you got into that food?
Yeah, absolutely. Like the second one, we weren't a rice household. Like I'd eaten rice. I liked rice, yeah. But we were more of like a potatoes, pasta, you know, your standard kind of British household in the 90s and 2000s. But then... yeah, maybe not even till I like properly got to Japan, or even like got to university and spent time around people that grew up that were rice people,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so there would be rice more in the house, like, you know, in the houses that I lived in. And then obviously I met Stephen, and he grew up in a rice household.
Yeah.
But then when I went to Japan, like it's a different kind of rice, but yeah, I feel like that's when
you got into it.
I really got into it, and it was like, oh my God, I can't live without this rice. And like, you know, even when you're eating, you know, something that doesn't need rice, like I want rice.
Yeah.
And like, it's a bit like, I guess like miso soup is the same, I think. I mean, you know, I can take or leave miso soup, but if it's there, I'll eat it and I like it. But I feel like in Japan, that's very much like it comes with every meal.
Yeah. Quite stinky. I remember having it for the first time and being like, oh God, I don't know if I can do this, guys. I've come around a bit more now, but yeah, it is. And the way it's kind of like cloudy, you know, when it's that kind of blooms up and you're like, what? Yeah, what's going on down there, guys?
You're never quite sure what's in there.
Yeah, it's like the creature
seaweed and tofu and yeah, I agree.
Yeah, that's interesting. I find it all very interesting.
Yeah. And now I'm a rice.
You're a rice gal.
Guy now.
Rice guy.
I mean, I still love bread and I still love pasta, but I feel like we're a rice house.
Mm.
Like a, you know. And maybe that's just how living in Asia gets you. Like, I said this on the minisode earlier, but I met up with my friends Emma and Carly this weekend, and they studied Japanese. We've all lived in Japan. And Carly was the only one who drove, but we made sure she brought her rice cooker so we could have rice. Like, so we could have good rice that we wouldn't have to, like, think about effing around with on the hob.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, it was, like, the first thing she said, like, oh, should I bring the rice cooker?
That's hilarious. Like, yes. We were, like,
And Emma, who I also saw, like, we all had to, for her wedding last year, like, she was, like, we need as many rice cookers as we possibly can.
That's
like, there was just like 20 rice cookers like racked up.
That is just that's so good. That's just not I've never had that, but I love it. Like, I wish I was more of a rice person. We were like a boil in the back household, like Uncle Ben's.
Oh yeah, same. I feel like I turned up at uni in Japan and like lived with all these in our like dorm was all these Koreans, and like loads of rice cookers, and they would always be full of rice, and I was like so confused. Like, I was like, why? Who's eating this much rice? But then you get like, and then you're like, oh my God, my dream is just to have a rice cooker full of rice that always, you know, that's always on and always there, and just available to eat. But I didn't get into that and like a boiling water. Do you ever see those boiling water things in Japan? Like, not a kettle. Like they're like hot water machines, yes, and they're just always bubbling, got hot water in them.
Yeah.
To make your like cup ramen. They're often in like the convenience stores. That's to make right. your cup ramen and stuff.
Ugh, why is it so fun there? We
had one of those in our dorm, and everyone would boil, like do their jammy eggs in there, like just put the eggs into the water, because it's fine, it's not cracking, like you'd be really careful, and then you just leave it in there whilst you're cooking the rest of your food.
I've gotten so into jammy eggs lately, and just like on lunch, and like because I've been trying so hard to make my lunches for the office, and just a jammy egg on everything just so like escalates to the next level.
Yeah,
it's so
and
good.
It makes you feel so fancy.
Yeah, and it looks great.
I can also recommend for your jammy eggs. I've recently got Maldon's. They've got new salts. They've got a garlic one and a chili one.
Ooh.
And so it's got like Aleppo chilies and other chilies like mixed in with the salt. So it's like a real nice topping. That on top of your like cut in half jammy egg. Is perfection.
Genius move by Maldon. Bravo, I know. Guys. What the hell? That's so good.
Yeah. So good. And the, yeah. Lovely. Anyway.
Yes.
This is a lot of.
Sorry, guys. The most.
There's no eggs. Pre-booked in what we made.
no eggs. But there's a lot of vegan egg replacements, aren't there? I kept being like, can I just. He would be like the equivalent of four vegan egg replacements. I'm like, can I just use four eggs? I'm not vegan here.
Yeah, I know.
I think that could
have
been.
And the price of those.
Oh, yeah, no, screw that. I think that could have been a nice little like sub note is like, if you're only vegetarian, like, you could use this or you could use that. Like, I think that would have been helpful.
Yeah. Because definitely one of the criticisms of something I made was, I just want to use eggs.
Yeah.
Like, I just,
yeah.
It was a bit annoying. But anyway, let's talk about what you made.
So I made two
things. What did you make?
Let's talk about what you made. What did you make?
come on, tell us.
I made two things. The first one was the surprisingly awesome 1 hour spicy sesame aubergine and courgette ramen, which has to win the fucking award for the longest recipe title of all time.
Wow.
And really? Anything that makes me say the word awesome.
Yeah,
it's just not a word that comes naturally.
I thought that was your word.
No. I will never say the word awesome. Anyway, love ramen. I've never made it at home. And I always like the really like peanutty kind of tahini ones. They're delicious. So this looked fun.
Yeah.
His opening line on this is, ramen is a bit like marriage. You know it's going to take a long time, but nobody tells you it never ends until it's too late. And I didn't really know what to think of that, but especially if I was his wife. But so you've got... Yeah, Vic has a look of confusion on her face too. It's a pretty decent ingredients list, but a lot of them are kind of store cupboard stuff, so it's courgettes, vinegar, sugar, salt, chili flakes, aubergine, vegetable oil, sesame oil, Sichuan pepper, garlic, ginger, soy sauce, mirin, chili sauce, dashi. I didn't make the dashi. Full confession. Tahini, miso, Chinese cabbage, ramen noodles, sesame seeds, a spring onion.
You're just throwing every umami ingredient at this, isn't it?
So, my
mirin. Dashi, tahini, miso.
Like immediate blocker was just like, I just don't want to make the dashi. And it was, he says ideally mushroom, and Tom absolutely hates mushroom. Like it's almost a phobia.
Really?
It's almost like I wasn't taking it
seriously. Oh yes, I knew that. Okay.
Until we ordered a pad thai recently and had a mushroom and he wouldn't even touch the entire thing. So I was like, I'm just going to buy stock. And I know that's not great, but I was just fucking busy. So I used that. But it was still great. This was a great, delicious dish.
Mm.
So you cut your courgette into like matchsticks. Or he says, oh, Doug's got his squeaky toy. Guys, bear with us. Oh, he's going to the living room. It's fine.
he's going to be alone with his squeaky toy. He's like, I don't want to hear about vegan food.
Yeah, he's like, look, this shit. you either spiralize or
I don't have a spiralizer because it's not 2010. Or you cut your courgette into matchsticks. And then you kind of toss that to pickle it with vinegar, sugar, salt, chili.
Lovely.
And then you cut the rest of the courgettes and aubergine into wedges. This is nice, actually. You make kind of just like lovely cooked soft courgette and aubergine with vegetable oil, sesame oil, Sichuan pepper. I wasn't really sure what form he wanted the Sichuan pepper in here. I have peppercorns, so I just kind of bash them up a bit. But yeah, that would have been nice to know. Garlic, ginger, chili flakes, and then you put them all in a pan over medium heat. You let that sizzle for a minute, and then you add in the courgette and aubergine. And you put a lid on and you kind of let them steam fry, and it just goes beautiful and soft, and, you know, and it still kind of holds its shape, but it's like lovely and tender, and it had all that flavor in. And then you add in soy sauce and mirin and a bit of chili sauce if you want, if it's spicier, and then you cook another 5 minutes. On the side, you bring your dashi or stock if you're a lazy wench like me, to a low boil, and then you whisk in tahini and miso. So that's your kind of broth bit. And he says reduce that to a simmer. And then, like, this, it was like £1 million on the go is the only thing. But I guess that's just like the only way, right? Like for ramen. You bring a large pan of water to a boil, and you boil the cabbage, Chinese cabbage, to for a minute, and remove that and keep it on the side, and then you bring that same water back to the boil and you cook your ramen until it's al dente, and then you drain that, and then basically you just divide your noodles between bowls, pour over your like miso sesame broth, and you toss it so it's all like coated, and then you put your aubergine courgette mix on top with some crushed sesame. So he says to like get 4 tablespoons of toasted sesame seeds crushed to a coarse powder. I didn't have a mortar and pestle at the time.
Oh my God, who's got the time?
Yeah, and I just like tried to blitz it in the mini chopper, and it just, you know what, it just achieves absolutely nothing. It's just like, great. I still have to wash this little thing, and I have like not achieved my goal in any way. But whatever, I just still just like put it on top. Then you put your pickled courgette on and spring onion. Great. Delicious.
Lovely.
Really, really good.
The pickled courgette and the little, the top, yeah, the aubergine and courgette sounds great.
Yeah, the broth was delicious. Tahini, the miso, like, it gives that real depth.
Mm.
Brought it for lunch the next day. Loved it.
Mm.
Really, really loved it. You'll love this difficulty rating, though, Vic, if the other ones annoyed you. As I was writing, it says difficulty. As I was writing this, the cat knocked over one of my plants and the wet dirt got everywhere. And this is a hell of a lot easier than cleaning that up. Tim, you're great at what you do.
Give it a rest.
But it's not, it is easy, but you're, you know, the washing up will keep you at the sink for like the duration of the cooking. But no, really, really like that. And
that sounds very like, so did you just use like, just vegetable stock?
I got like a stock pot, and I like, because I think they have more flavour, and I just got that going, like with the right amount of water. Oh, dog's off on a bark. Dog was a big fan. So yeah, I have, oh my God.
That sounds great. And frankly, like just that base could be great for anything, right? Like stock or dashi, tahini and miso. Like, that sounds banging just for, like, any noodles.
Yeah, I think I've talked before. I'm going to close the door on my noisy dog. I think I've talked before about my old colleague, Nicole, who I worked in the bakery with. And one day she just came in for, like, staff food, and she was like, I want to make, like, a veggie ramen. And she just raided the fridge and made like a veggie stock with tahini and like all these delicious things. And then just like created this amazing like fridge raid ramen. And this reminded me of that. Like it was, yeah, probably better than that. But
yeah, it was perfect. It's what you need. And I feel like it's got all the things you want from a ramen, which is so often, you know, meat, like you think about it being meaty. If it's not like a you know, like a pork broth, it's a chicken broth, or even like a miso broth often is like chicken-y, right?
Yeah.
And or topped with something.
Yeah, and because the courgettes and aubergine were kind of cooked in this nice, like, spicy oil, that added a bit more to the brothy base, and it was just great. Really like that. I would definitely make that again. And then the second thing I made was the rough night rice.
Oh.
Did you see this?
I think I saw it. Let me find it.
It's page 168. And I don't know what to make of this. It definitely caught my eye because it's just a funny title, right? Like rough night rice.
Yeah.
And he starts off by saying rice is has always been one of his favorite things to eat when he's blotto. Blotto is just like a word I haven't heard in ages. And I guess maybe similar to you, he said when he lived in dorms, the only piece of equipment that he owned was a rice cooker that his parents got for like a wedding present back in 79. So when he came home like drunk after a night out, he'd cook some rice. And all he had to do was just like dump in rice and water and switch it on. And now he still loves rice when he's like a bit pissed. But now he has lived in London for ages and he loves like kebab shops and he loves the like, you know, greasy, meaty, but with some like tangy condiments and a bit of fresh veg.
Mm-hmm.
So he's tried to like mash it up. And yeah, what I was saying earlier about him being a craft beer bar manager was like, basically he makes you like prepare this when you're sober is the idea. I didn't do this. I prepared it when I was sober and I ate it when I was sober. But he makes you prepare it while you're sober and like put it in like lunch boxes or like Tupperware and keep the like fresh like toppings to the side. And then he says like, come home drunk, put it in the microwave and put like your fresh tops on the side. And he said like,
I mean, it's genius.
It is quite genius. And he's like, it's really delicious, but it's also really easy. Even the bar staff could make it if we couldn't get a chef to stay late, which I'm like maybe wondered was like when he was like a bar manager. I don't know. Anyway, I don't know about. I'd love to know the science about eating when you're drunk, because he's like, it takes the edge off both the booze and its after effects, and I just don't know if that's ever been the case for anyone. But anyway, so you're like. He says to use cooked rice or leftover rice. Oil, it's so easy. It's ridiculous. It's like oil, red onion, garlic cloves. Then he says, like, use pak choy or bok choy, cabbage or tender stem broccoli. Or just, like, some green veg, like, roughly chopped.
Yeah.
Three vegan sausages chopped up, which I think is hilarious. Kimchi.
He's really like going for this, like, you know, dirty, like after. Okay.
But I love that, like, Japanese, like Asian, like dirty food. Oh, dog, give it up. Is nothing compared to like chips and a burger, right? Or like chicken.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, and then like he says a glug of soy sauce, a splash of mirin. I don't know. I like it, but also, is it a tablespoon? Is it two? Amort sesame seeds crushed to a coarse powder. I just didn't bother my arse this time. A jalapeno.
Got the time.
No. Spring onions, lime. Jalapeno, spring onions, lime are all to go on top. And then a drizzle of hot chili sauce and a drizzle of vegan mayo. You could use your vegan kewpie. But basically,
I could.
You just fucking fry everything, right? Like you fry your onion and for like 5 minutes. Then you put in your garlic. Green sausages, fry them till the sausages are brown, add in the kimchi and you cook that until the liquid has been evaporated, put in your rice, your soy sauce, your mirin, break it all up, and then that's when he says to add in the sesame too, and then he says remove it from the heat, leave it to cool, then pack it into microwavable containers. Put the other stuff, the red onion, reserved red onion, because you just keep a spoonful back of that, jalapeno, spring onions, lime wedge in a separate container, and then you just keep it all in the fridge till you're drunk. And then he's got like after drinking, and it's like open the lid a crack, microwave for 3 to 4 minutes, Transfer to a bowl, drizzle over the hot sauce and the mayo, and then you add the fresh garnishes on top. Give everything a good stir before shoveling it in your face and pass out on the couch.
Yeah, that is...
And it
sounds great.
To be fair, it is great. Like, it's got... Again, it's like fried rice, egg fried rice or whatever. Whenever I make it, it's a bit janky and it's, like, not great. But, like, there's enough flavour in this that, like, it all coats the rice really nicely. The pictures. I mean, I'm setting new records every episode for, like, ugliest pictures. But these ones might take the biscuit. There's just no way to make it look nice. Pretty. No. But it was great.
Lime is interesting.
Oh, I didn't have a lime. I was sure I had a lime and I used a lemon instead.
Yeah, I feel like that's an interesting... I mean, I get it because you've got all those, like, kind of rich... You know, the kimchi and the soy and all that stuff. But, like, a lime isn't... No. I'm sure it's nice. That's interesting. Mm. It does sound great, though.
Yeah, it was great.
I would just eat that. Like, I don't need to be drunk for that. No. It sounds really... healthy almost.
Yeah, it wasn't that dirty. The dirtiest thing was like the vegan sausages, maybe, if you can go that far. But they're not. And so I packed a couple of lunch boxes. They're gonna come to work for lunches.
Nice.
I'm on the spot.
Will you be drunk or?
Well, hopefully that would be one way to make the day go quicker. Love you, colleagues, if you're listening.
Definitely not drinking at work.
Never. But yeah, so for all my kind of like lack of inspiration, the recipes themselves worked really well.
Yeah, were good.
Yeah. What about you, my friend?
I felt this way about mine too.
Can I just say, Vic has got a big reusable shopping bag in her background that's got some kind of phallic thing on it, and then it says big one. Does it say big one?
It says big on the big shop, and it's a corn in a cob. Like a, it's still in its. It's a corn on the cob, and it's like.
Sorry, obviously I'm
sheath. I don't know what that's called. Is that what it's not? What it's called?
I don't know. That sounds dirty to me. That it's in its sheath.
Sorry about
like
my
it's
big
Valentine's
one.
Day. Vic and I are here recording together. I'm having a beer.
I've just got my big one behind me. Also, Alison Roman, her book is on the bed behind me as well. So her, like, you know, chest is on, you know, it's close.
She's near, her chest is near the big one.
I don't know why that book is out.
Who knows?
What did I make?
What did you make?
Okay, I also made two things. Also a ramen, interestingly, for... comparison, which is great. I'm really glad that you did one as well, because I feel like this is good. It's a good comparison. I didn't do the same one. I did the French onion ramen.
Oh, you did. I saw that.
I did.
How was
it.
That?
It was good. It was good. It's long.
Is it?
Because I mean, French onion soup is long, right? Easy but long.
Yeah.
And I thought this when you were talking through yours, right? Like he made you
force me.
Put like boiled cabbage on the top.
Yeah.
And he does that with it. I mean, not jumping ahead, right? But he tops this French onion ramen with cabbage and spinach that have just been kind of boiled.
Ooh. It sounds like
and it doesn't need it, but
an Irish.
Yes, it's not, it doesn't need it. I kind of see. Anyway, well, let's talk about it. But it's a really nice recipe. It's interesting. I love a French onion soup. Do you like a French onion soup?
Love a French onion soup. But part of the joy for me would be in the toasty, cheesy, toasty bit.
Yes, yes.
Which obviously you're probably not going to get here.
No, well, I don't. If you cast your mind back to a couple of weeks ago when I texted you that vegan cheese should be sent to the bin, never to come back. I can't remember my exact words.
Yes, that was a great text.
But that was whilst making this. So, it also is a really big list of ingredients. I will rush through it. So, olive oil, two red onions, two brown onions... sugar, salt, garlic, sake, ruby port or red wine.
Wow.
Yeah. It's only 2 tablespoons. I haven't opened a whole bottle of red wine.
But you're not going to buy a ruby port, are you?
Nope.
I just found the text, by the way. It said, vegan cheese can be sent to the moon to not return.
With his other little cheesy friends.
At least the moon's made out of real cheese.
Yeah. We'll get to this, but yeah. 1.2 litres of dashi, he suggests mushroom or triple seaweed. I used the kombu dashi that I'd bought from Japan with, and I threw some dried mushrooms that I had in there to soak for a bit. Yeah. So it's like mushroomy. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah. 2 bay leaves, fresh thyme. So you've got like the, you know, Frenchy
vibe.
Pepper, soy sauce, balsamic vinegar, mirin, marmite, corn flour, 200 grams of spinach, 1/4 of a savoy cabbage, noodles, spring onions, bamboo shoots.
Oh my God.
Use pickled if you have them. Sesame oil, vegan cheese, cheddar or Italian style, and toasted bread. So, you'll know if you've ever attempted to make French onion soup, it's all about
time.
The onions. Yeah. And also like the beefy broth, whatever. And that's obviously not here, but yes. So you basically, you chop your onions and you caramelize them for like well over an hour. So he is like 10 minutes until they soften. And then at least another 40 to 45, stirring every 10 minutes. And it was more than that. We were at like 1 hour and 15 probably before even. But it's fine because you know what you're getting into. He's not saying that they'll do it in 30 minutes, which I appreciate.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. People lie.
Yeah, they lie. It reminded me, his method or whatever reminded me a bit of the Momofuku ones where you kind of leave them for 10 minutes, then stir.
Right.
And you're kind of moving them every 10 minutes.
Yeah.
He says, when the onions are just starting to brown, stir in some caster sugar and add the garlic. And then keep for those last 10 minutes of cooking, like make sure the onions don't burn, add water if you want. So when that's done and you've got these like, it's always, you know, it's great. I love caramelized onions, but like they always, you feel a bit sad, don't you? When they go from like this mass of onions to like nothing.
Yeah.
So then you add your, yes, like spinach, your sake, which is like 4 tablespoons, I think, and wine. And like, that's just to deglaze, I think, pretty much. Mm. And then you add your dashi, bay leaves, thyme and black pepper, and you simmer that all together for 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then you stir in soy sauce, balsamic vinegar, mirin and marmite. And shout out to my neighbor Jamie, who I don't have marmite. We love Jamie. He's a fan of the pod. And I was running around various neighbors because I didn't have any Marmite. We're not Marmite eaters, and I forgot to buy some. And he was in the middle of a work call.
Oh.
And I'm at his door like, hi, are you Marmite people? Can we borrow some? So thank you, Jamie.
There's a love and or hate it joke in here somewhere, but I won't be the one.
Yeah. But the important thing is we love Jamie.
And he hates you for interrupting his work call.
Yeah. And whoever is talking to on the call, I'm very sorry that you heard some random girl at his door being like, oh, do you like Marmite? taste and adjust the seasoning as you like it. Remove the thyme and the bay leaves. And then he wants you to take out 3 tablespoons of the broth at this point, put it into a dish to cool, and then stir in some corn flour to make it into a slurry.
Ooh.
Then put it back into the soup and then bring to the boil to thicken. And then you're like blanching the spinach and boiling the cabbage.
Right.
In just water in a separate pan.
Okay. Why?
Not salty water, just water. set it aside and then use that same water to cook your ramen until al dente again, and then divide the ramen among four deep bowls, ladle over the soup, give the noodles a stir to make sure they're not sticking together, and then top the ramen with spinach, cabbage, the spring onions, the bamboo shoots, your truffle oil and the vegan cheese, served with the toast on the side.
What are the greens which doing I think is actually, in there?
Yeah, they're not doing anything.
They're not doing anything. Yeah, that would really put me off, I think.
No, and I that's a bit sad. Not sad, but jealous that you got, like, pickles and, you know, like a nice topping.
Yeah.
And I'm just, I was stuck with that. Like, luckily I did. I took the, what's it called, to, I quick pickled my bamboo shoots.
Nice.
Just with some, like, vinegar and stuff I had in, because I was like, bamboo shoots are nice, but, like, they need something. Yeah. They're just in water. And so I... I think I had the Cathedral City vegan cheese. Oh, so put that on top. And then I was like, I know about French onion soup. I'll get my blowtorch out and I'll, like, melt it. it's just blackened it. Like, it didn't melt at all.
There's no meltability factor in that.
Not at all. And, like, you know, I'm sure other vegan cheeses might be better, but this one was not. And then for Stephen's bowl, I just used, like, normal cheese and, like, put that on top. But we both agreed that the cheese didn't add anything.
Really?
Like, well, I didn't add anything to mine because I scraped it off, and it smelled so bad, like that fake cheese. No, yeah, it's not nice. But the ramen, like, base was great. Right. Really liked it. Would definitely make it again, like, on its own.
Yeah.
And his serving it with toast is inspired, okay, or like bread. Yeah. And I toasted some sourdough I had in the fridge, because you do want to do that with, like, once you've eaten your noodles, you want to, like, dip it in, and it's really nice. We had loads left over because it's quite a big recipe, and saved it and had it with the second thing I made as, like, a dip.
Ooh.
Or like an extra, and it was really good, and that had none of the toppings on it. Okay. It was just the soup.
Yeah.
But it's good. I don't know what it says about Japanese vegan food. It tastes French oniony, right?
Yeah.
'Cause it's got the Marmite and all that kind of stuff to try and make up for the beef stock that you're missing, right? It's just not cheesy.
Yeah. Would Japanese ramen ever use beef?
Yeah, I'm sure there is one, but maybe not. Yeah. I don't know.
I'm just wondering to what extent of a bastardization it is.
I don't know of a beef ramen. my first thought is, like, because the whole thing about ramen, right, is that you're boiling bones to get all of the, like, you know, good stuff out of bones.
Big.
And are beef bones too big to fit? I mean, you know, pigs are quite... Anyway, so I don't know, but somebody who's a bit better than me could... But yeah, it's good. And it's a nice... Also, I think it's quite nice if you do like that French onion taste.
Yeah.
It's a bit like, I suppose, if you really like beef bourguignon or whatever and you're vegan, there's surely a way to make that. So Defo would make that again. But the toppings, like, nobody needs those. Or the vegan cheese.
No.
Or the cheese in general.
No.
So, yeah, that was my first thing. And then my second thing I made was the sweet corn curry croquettes.
Ooh.
Which are...
I think I saw them. They looked...
Yeah. I feel like they were... Yeah, adjacent to the ones you mentioned earlier, like leek and pea or whatever they were.
I just love the word adjacent.
So he talks about how this is basically his like ode to curry pan, like curry bread, which is essentially like a donut. He calls it like a donut filled with a Japanese curry. I love a curry pan, let me tell
yeah,
you.
Yeah, but just curry pan, is it meaty?
Not necessarily. Probably not at all. It's probably just mostly veggie.
Oh, I think maybe I did have it. Oh, God, it's so good. Inspired, actually.
Oh, so good. I feel I can, and this is, again, this is a chat for another day or maybe even offline for us, but I ate some really good curry pan when I was there this time. And ones with, like, additional things that we'll have to come back to. But he was like, this is too, making curry pan is too difficult for a book called Vegan Japan Easy. Mm-hmm. So this is an alternative, curry croquettes, which he says are even better because they're more crunchy on the outside. So, and these, you know, were great, mm-hmm. actually. I love a croquette, and the Japanese do croquettes very well. I love a...
Yeah, crunchy. I love a, is it the panko?
Yeah.
Is that what makes the difference?
Yes. Yeah. I think it's the... Yeah, and just the deep... They're just good at deep frying things.
Good at everything, really.
Yeah. Yeah, most things. Not vegan food, apparently.
Or dairy.
Yeah. Yes, so... You start off by essentially making mashed potatoes. So you boil a kilogram of floury potatoes. This is a big recipe. Mm. He does say that you can freeze some. So you boil your potatoes, and then whilst they're boiling, you make like a curry paste with oil, a finely diced onion, hot red chili, 150 grams of sweet corn. He says from a tin is fine.
Okay.
2 heaped tablespoons of curry powder. And then he calls for a heaped tablespoon of garam masala salt. And this threw me off.
What's that?
I think it's just garam masala when I Googled it.
Oh.
I thought this was like a special salt,
yeah.
But I couldn't find anything to do with that. So it was, I think it's just garam masala, which, throwback time, I got my Dishoom garam masala that I'd spent all that time making out because I still have it and I use that, which was great to do. And, you know, thanks Dishoom.
For something.
So... You kind of, you fry all that up together. You saute the onions, add in the corn and then the spices. And then, so you've got like a thick paste. So then once your potatoes have cooked and cooled, you mash them and then you're supposed to add the paste. I did add a little bit of oat milk.
Oh.
Because I just feel like you've got to mash your potatoes. I want nicely mashed potatoes. I don't want, you know...
Puritan potatoes.
I don't want bad mash.
No.
Yeah, I feel like you need a bit of something. And I have oat milk, so I added that. Yeah. So it's still vegan.
Butter or milk would typically go in, right? To make it somewhat...
Yes. Yeah. You don't want that, like...
Grainy.
Not. Yeah, you want something. And then you kind of you add in your paste and you kind of put it all, you know, mix it all together.
Yeah.
And he says a generous amount of salt. When the mash is cool enough to handle, divide it into 16 equal balls and then squash each ball into kind of oblong patty shape.
Right.
16
equal balls. How fun was that? I hate dividing stuff up like that because I have to weigh it because on my eye, yeah. I can't eyeball that stuff.
I didn't weigh it because I was like, it's just potatoes, right? Yeah. Like, if it was cookies or whatever,
sure.
I would, but
yeah, yeah.
I just kind of eyeballed it. It was a bit annoying, but it was fine. And then you put it in, you put them on baking sheets and then freeze them for about 30 minutes so that they firm up. Okay, so then comes the fun bit of...
wrapping them around.
Like...
something
battering them yeah essentially so he says you can use a vegan egg replacer equivalent to 8 eggs. Jeez. And that would have cost me, you know, a month's salary. So He says you could also use 2 times recipe quantity of his batter for breadcrumbing, which is essentially corn flour, flour, and water mixed up
right.
into like a thick paste. Yeah. And you use that instead of where you'd use the egg in the...
Okay. Yeah.
In the like kind of breadcrumbing process. Yeah, so you get each ball, put it in flour, put it in the...
Flour.
The flour, and then into panko to cover it. The batter for breadcrumbing that he has, it's very thick. It reminds me of like a fish batter.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, like...
Enveloping.
Yeah. Yes, it was very thick, but, you know, whatever. I feel if I made these again, which I probably would, I'd just use an egg.
Yeah.
Because I'm, you know, not vegan, but I realised that that could be... I might be, yeah. I think I'd still use an egg. So then you... I've lost...
You've got it.
Okay, so you've done that. You've got your croquettes, essentially. And then you can freeze some, if you want to, on baking sheets at that point, like pre-cooked. So you freeze it on the baking sheet, and then I guess once they're frozen, you can put them into a bag, whatever. Mm. And then, or you cook them. And he gives instructions for deep frying or like shallow frying. And I chose to shallow fry them. And so that's just a case of heating some oil, cooking them on one side for about 5 minutes,
mm.
and then until they're golden brown, flip them to the other side. And then he says to put them back on the baking sheet and put them in the oven.
Oh.
On like a low, on like, oh no, on like 200 degrees, I guess, to just get them hot all the way through.
Bad name of the week.
On this Valentine's Day. and they, excuse me, they were really nice. They were really, really nice.
They sound like nice.
I really rated these. Yeah. They maybe, you could have probably had more sweet corn in them. And I would say, so I made them in the daytime and then we had them for dinner with the French onion soup thing as like a dippy, ooh, like a dip for them. Yeah,
great.
On the side, which was really, really nice. Because I think you need, like you were saying earlier, right? You need something with them.
Yeah.
Like I wasn't sure. Yeah, I wasn't also sure how to make them into a dinner. But because we had that leftover, we did that and just some salad. Really, really nice. So I cooked them in the day and I shallow fried them. And then I put them in the air fryer in the evening to just warm, make sure they were warm. Genius. All the way through.
Yeah.
And they were really, really good. I would say if you make these, really watch your seasoning, like your really? Salt, because they could have been, and maybe they were even on the bland side, because you're not, that's a lot of potatoes.
Yeah.
And yeah. You've got your curry stuff, but if there's no salt in your seasoning, then you've got to really, really salt them.
Yeah.
Just to make sure they taste of something, not just oil.
Yeah.
But I would definitely make them again.
That is something.
I would, like I said, I would use an egg.
That struck me, actually, that he doesn't really, I guess, and I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on this, is like seasoning isn't such a big thing here, I guess, because you use like soy sauce and stuff like that, which balances it. But
yeah, which is miso, super salty.
But yeah, that did strike me. I was like, oh, he hasn't told me, and nor did I miss it. But like maybe then for something like that, you're just kind of, I don't know. Less inclined.
Yes, because you're not using any of those things. Yeah. I mean, he does say a generous amount of salt, but I feel like you really need to like test that, or like taste while you're, after you've mashed everything together with your paste.
Yeah.
Just to make sure it's bang on.
Yeah.
But I thought it was great. And you don't need the chili, the hot chili that he asks for. If you wanted to make it for someone that didn't like spice, or, you know, like I was even thinking I could give it to Marcus if it didn't have the kind of fresh chili in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, really liked it. And they lasted for a few days. I made them all and cooked them all for my sins. I don't really know I did that. I should have frozen them. But I ate them over the next couple of days and I thought they were great. Stayed crispy, like when they were warmed up, didn't get soggy.
Great.
yeah, absolutely would rate it. I love a croquette and I thought they were great. But yeah, I would use an egg if I wasn't vegan. And what's your thing? And they, just to, their difficulty rating is super not difficult.
That's not true, right? Because you're battering and frying and like...
Yeah. The French onion ramen. I feel like this had a more nuanced one. Let's have a look. It said... Oh, it actually just says, so not difficult, it will make you weep.
Wow.
But I mean, if you struggle to, like, you know, stand or don't have any time, then it is difficult, because caramelising onions for that many onions for that long is hard.
Yeah, he needs to chill on those ratings.
They're useless. Don't do them again. Tim, what... Was there anything else that you wanted to make?
There was some... I'm walking now. It's the podcast on tour.
You're leaving?
I can hear my ever needy terrier of mine batting his water bowl, as he likes to do, to demand some more. Oh. There was...
I like this multitasking of yours. It's just
the story of my life.
Just so real.
I'm a full-time mom, okay?
dog mom.
There was these aubergines in like a sweet miso sauce that were like fried, that looked really nice. And then there was soy sauce brownies, I think, that looked interesting as well.
Oh, yeah.
And there was like a Bloody Mary, which I couldn't really see. I just love a Bloody Mary, but like I don't think I could see what the like Japanesey element of it was. It was called a Bloody Mariko. It's a big pinch of sashimi for decorating the glass rim. Soy sauce was in it. Sorry. Oh, I take it all back. There's loads of Japanese things in here. Soy sauce, wasabi, which is great because I love horseradish in there. And then he says to use vodka or shochu. Yeah, that looks great.
I thought you said then when you said sashimi. I thought you said sashimi around the rim, and I was like, that doesn't sound very vegan.
No, like, gross.
Couple of bits of salmon around raw salmon. God,
that's horrendous. What about you?
I bet you find that something. I actually liked the idea of the croquettes you mentioned, the leek and pea ones.
Yeah, yeah, they
before I saw those ones, they were on my list. And then the other thing I almost made, but then I didn't in the end, was the portobello mushroom and onion sukiyaki bowl.
Ooh, I didn't see think.
Yeah, it's page 160. And I was just interested in this because... He says it's a combination of sukiyaki, which he calls beef hot pot. He translates as beef hot pot, and gyudon, which is like beef bowl. And we eat a lot of gyudon in this house. Yeah. Like, I make it all the time. So I was really interested to see how that firstly, his recipe, because I think that's interesting.
Yeah.
And just how that translated to mushrooms. But I just didn't end up making it, mostly because Stephen also doesn't like mushrooms, so I feel like it would have just been me eating.
You don't want to be just you. So.
No. And, you know, the other things I could make and we both eat. So, yeah. Should we
rate?
Go.
We're at a...
To Japan?
What a bumper duration episode here for our listeners.
I know.
We love you.
I'll quickly talk you through the rating. Should I?
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. I feel like we can be forgiven because I can be forgiven for just basically talking for an hour and a half because this is our first Japanese book.
That's true.
Unless you count Momofuku, but this is the first like proper Japanese book. And so just let me have this one, lads.
You have it. This is your moment.
Thank you. McCutcheon. I mean, this is my perfect ramen.
With shochu.
Oh, shot you hangovers are not for me, and I never want to have one ever again. So our rating is every episode we rate based on five criterias, which I'm going to tell you in a moment. But every episode we also change the what we rate out for something to do with the chef or the book, etc. So we have five criteria, and they are as follows: usability and accessibility.
That's one.
Ingredients used. That's another one. veggie friendliness.
Yeah.
Which, aesthetics, and the final one is inspirability. And today we are going to rate Tim Anderson's vegan Japan Easy.
Yeah.
Out of annoying difficulty ratings.
Yeah.
Which are on, I think we can't stress this enough, they're on every single recipe, and not one of them deviates from, this is so easy, you'd be a dumb fuck if you wouldn't be able to do it. Essentially, that's what they all
and the
say.
The best one might be on 175 when it's for red bean and chestnut jelly, and the difficulty rating is, I don't think you're ready for this not difficult jelly.
Yeah, it's just...
okay, so usability and accessibility... I'll give it one. I would say you get ready to usability your every dish in your kitchen, because that's what I was doing for my ramen. But, you know, yeah, it wasn't hard. Ingredients used, I think I might have to not give it a point there, because you will inevitably, like, what, Sichuan? Like, Sichuan peppers were actually, I've got a couple of bags from, I don't know, seeing them somewhere and just like, yeah, I'm just so... organized and exotic. And I was like, I simply must stock up on Sichuan peppercorns, darling. But you know,
organized and exotic could be a good band name or porn star name
or my work signature. So I think you could struggle to find some of this stuff. I mean, even ramen noodles on their own, I had to buy like packs of ramen noodles with the like sachets, and then just like discard the sachets because they were like porky. So ingredients used, no. Veggie friendliness, obviously this is vegan, so it's very veggie friendly. Aesthetics, it is beautiful. Inspirability, yeah, I don't think I'm going to give it a point. I'm so sorry, Tim. And that's not your fault. Maybe. I don't know. I mean,
it's his book.
I don't know. I would happily eat any of this stuff were it put in front of me, but I just felt like, I don't know if I'm ready to make all of those things. And I don't know. I just was lacking it a little bit, lacking the enthusiasm. Yeah. So what's that?
I think we've both...
Three annoying difficulty ratings out of five.
Yeah, I think we've both, I feel like the Dishoom book burnt us out. And anytime we see like, we'll make this on page 15, both like,
hell no. Yeah.
No, but not this shit again. So I get that. So mine is similar. So usability and accessibility, one. Ingredients used, I gave half.
Okay, yeah.
Because for me, I had the stuff, but I realised that it could be quite difficult, it's particularly things like dashi and like, anyway. Veggie friendly, yes. Aesthetics, yes. Very nice, even not as a physical book. And then the same, I was like a zero on inspirability. So it's 3.5 from me, 3.5 annoying difficulty ratings out of five. But I don't think, if you're still with us, dear listener, I don't think you should judge all Tim Anderson books on this if you are not vegan, because his other ones are great. He is, you know, a master of Japanese food. He's a very good chef. I just don't think this is his forte.
Yeah. And we didn't hate it. The recipes were good when we did them. No. It was just trying to find ones that you really wanted.
It's often the other way around, I guess. Like, I'm used to it being the other way around. I'm used to being excited about lots of things in the book and then the recipes being not as good as they look. But actually, maybe this is good because it's a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, that's true. The ones when you do them work out, right? Well, yeah. And if you're vegan, hey, if you've been like a lifelong vegan, maybe this is just like a breath of fresh air to you. They're like, oh, finally.
Yeah.
So, do let us know, listeners, if you have this and if you, what you thought of it, or if you're, if we've put you off it entirely. Sorry if so.
No, don't.
No, it's, worth a look.
Thank you for listening. I'm so sorry for it being so long.
No, it's always going to be long. It's our Japan special. Japan special.
We love you.
We love you. We love you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Cookbook Circle. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast and leave us a review as it helps others to find us and enjoy us. You can see how the recipes from this episode turned out on our Instagram at Cookbook Circle, where you can also get in touch with us, let us know your thoughts, feedback, ideas for episodes, whatever you like. We really love to hear from all of you. So we'll see you next time. Bye. Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.